Hi, family. I'm an addict named Judith.
Hey, Judith.
And I thank God for being here. And I also want to thank the CPRC and 820 Convention for calling and asking me to share on the topic, Why Are We Here? I also want to thank my sponsor for being here today and all of my friends, you know, who always are by my side, whether I'm sharing or not. I just want to thank you for also being here in this meeting. And I'm real excited about recovery. I was so excited when I finally pulled up in the hotel we were staying because I've been looking forward to this for a long time. This is my dose of getting better. This is a convention that I go to every year regularly, and it just means so much to me to be here in Ocean City underneath the atmosphere of recovery. And I want to share with you, and the statement that I just read spoke about not speaking about our war stories excessively. And I agree. However, for this addict, it's necessary to share some of my war story because I got to be able to show a newcomer or someone even who's been here a while the great contrast and what my life was like and how it's like today. I'm talking about the fact when you ask, why are we here? I used to be one of the first ones to joke in a meeting and say, why are we here? Because I'm not all there. You know, but I'm here to heal. I'm here to uncover and recover. I'm here to learn how to, a day at a time, through the steps of Narcotics Anonymous, become more and more the person that God wants me to be, and less like that girl who picked up that first hit. I'm here today because I want to get better, because after the drugs were removed, that's the surface stuff. But after the drugs were removed, I found out that there were a whole lot of other illnesses because this disease manifests in all of the areas of my life. And at first I thought all I had to do was put down the crack and that my life would get better. But what I know today was that the crack just showed me that there was a problem deep inside, like maybe even before I picked up that first hit. And so I keep coming back a day at a time, and I'm here as exploration. It's a journey. It's not an event. And although it doesn't happen overnight, recovery does happen over time. And I'm able to look back at many areas of my life. I'm able to look at areas of my life that I thought I would never get better in. And I'm a lot better in those areas. And then there's some of those areas that I thought I would have mastered by now. And I still fail repeatedly. But y'all are teaching me to learn to embrace my mistakes. To learn to not put my issues and stuff on a pedestal and feel real bad if they're still not overcome. Because I know as long as I keep coming back, in spite of me, this program is going to show up in spite of me and heal me in some areas that I might not be ready today. But just by showing up, in spite of me, there's going to be a work that's done inside of me. I've learned that I have to bring the body and the mind and the spirit and the willingness will follow. I've learned that I'm here to be able to tap into those three indispensable principles that we talk about. That honesty, that open-mindedness and willingness. With these, we are well on our way. With these, we're able to tap into many situations and circumstances in our life and uncover all of the mess and uncover all of the drama and find out why did I take that first hit and why did I feel so much pain as a little girl and what can I do about it today? Because y'all told me it's about living in a solution. And what I've learned today is that if I dwell on what's wrong with me, I can't move forward. But if I'm able to look at the fact that, yes, there's still a lot of things wrong with me, but that I have a God who can fix everything that's wrong with me a day at a time, if I just let him, then I'm able to have the confidence to begin this journey just one more time. I need to share with you that I am originally from Philadelphia and New Jersey, and I moved here almost 20 years to the day because I was looking for that geographic cure. I took my first hit of crack when I was 28 years old. Prior to that, I thought I had everything under control because all I was doing was smoking marijuana and drinking. And I didn't think that I was unmanageable with the weed because I never got broke. I was still able to hold on to my apartment, and my finances were still intact, and I thought my sanity was still intact. And because I sold the weed, I never felt that deficit in my pocket. So I was in denial for many years that I was a weed addict. And then I met a guy who was a big cocaine dealer, and he would give me a whole bunch of powder. I'm talking about way back in the Free Basin days, before the Ready Rocks. And he would give me a whole bunch of powder, and it could sit for months because it didn't really mean that much to me. But then I met a crackhead. And so what I started doing was taking the powder from the guy that liked me and giving it to the guy that I liked. And one day he told me, thank you, but I don't want us to snort it tonight. And I'm like, well, what are you going to do? He's like, I'm not going to snort it. I'm like, well, what are you going to do? So he commenced to give me this big lesson on freebasing. And I was pissed off because all I know is I had a big pile of stuff and it turned into a little rock. And I was like, what did you do? And he said, well, let me teach you something. So he's doing all of this, you know, finagling and flipping the screens and doing all of this stuff. And he's saying, you pull it like this. I'm like, I don't feel it. No, 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 you pull it like this. No, 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 you pull it like that. I did not get high. And I found out months later because this greedy addict was handing me the empty pipe. And so I continued on. But one day, I was over some Jamaican friend's house, and they saw that I was, you know, economically secure, and they wanted to turn me out. So they put a whole bunch of powder on the pipe, a whole bunch of it on the pipe, and told me the right way to hit it. And I remember feeling that, woo! And for 10 years, I chased that first high and never got it. I'm talking about locked up in basements, stuck on stupid, at crack houses in Camden, New Jersey, where they told me that the only way that I would be able to stay was if I was able to smoke as much as they were able to smoke. And I'm hanging. I remember the pain. I remember sharp pains would come to my heart. And I would hear that inner voice say, if you take that one more hit, you're going to clock up out of here. And I remember taking that one more hit anyway. I remember being so disabled in my body that I would be clutching my heart with one and holding the match with the other and somebody holding the pipe because I couldn't stop, caught up in the grip of addiction. And I had a little girl that was like 7 or 8 years old that I abandoned when I came here to Maryland. But I justified that I didn't abandon her because I said, well, at least I'm leaving her in the capable hands of my mother and my sisters. But you know, for real, it was abandonment because this little girl grew up never knowing her father. And she grew up never knowing her father because I got impregnated when I was a senior in college. And this guy pretended to like me. I thought there would be a relationship out the deal. But he was just for the hit of the sex piece. And after having sex with him, he began talking to one of my best girlfriends who I had shared a room with. And not only did he not want to have anything to do with me, he went and got with and then later married my best girlfriend in college. So it was like I was up without a baby's father and a best girlfriend, like, all in the same week. And it was devastating to me because I had never had sex before. You know, I thought that if you only had sex one or two times, you couldn't get pregnant. Wrong. So here I am pregnant with a baby in my womb, going home, graduating from college. And some people ask who the baby's daddy was, but some are too polite. I guess they went behind my back asking who he was. And it was an area of shame. Matter of fact, it took me to about having 5 years of recovery to even be able to share it. Because I took it personally. I thought it was because it was something wrong with me. I didn't know that it was a reflection of this man not just not being able or willing to embrace manhood. And I would go to him, even with him dealing with my best girlfriend, and say, you know, forget about me. I just want you to be here for your daughter. And he would promise me that he would be there for my daughter. And I would lay down with him and have sex, you know, figuring that this would make him want to be a father. And he was never a father to my daughter. And my daughter is like 26 years old now. And if her father were to come up to her right now and kick her in the butt, she wouldn't even know who he was. And this was an area of pain and an area of shame to me all my life. And it wasn't until I had even 5 years clean that I began able to recover and heal in that area. I would write letters. And I'll never forget when my daughter was 21 years old, I wrote a letter to the ex-best girlfriend. And I said, Rashida is still hurting. Is he around? Has he asked for her? Because we've moved to Maryland, you know. And I said, I know you've got a daughter now, and I know your daughter is 2 years younger than my daughter. Put the shoes on the other foot. If it had been the other way around, wouldn't you at least want to, you know, offer your daughter the opportunity to, you know, meet her father? And I said, I'm not trying to badger you. I'm living a new lifestyle now, and I'm no longer using drugs, and I'm doing all of these positive things. And if you tell me to never write again, I'll never write you back again. But please, is it available? We're not looking for no child support. She's over 21. Is it available for him to meet his daughter? And, you know, she wrote me back, and she said, you know, I'm sorry. I should have answered your letters years ago. She said, but Dennis walked out on us when my daughter was 3 or 4 years old. And all of these years, you know, I had taken it real personal. He was just a jerk. You know, and she said, and you tell your daughter that if she wants to call me, she can call me. But the man that she thinks she might want to meet, she might not really want to meet. You know, and it's been just an area of pain for my daughter. She's acted out, and there's some things I need to share to you today about my daughter that ties into the fact of why I'm here. Because there's a lot of things I've been holding back, and I'm not holding them back after today. So when I told my daughter what had happened, I said, see, here you are hurting about your father. I said, but he abandoned the little girl that he married, her mother. I said, so it's one thing for you to not really have seen him, but yet it's another thing for him to have been in the hospital and been around this little girl. This is the kind of thing that make kids feel that they're rejected. That didn't help her that much, but it kind of helped me a lot in the healing process. And I'm sharing this to share that that same girl that I abandoned in New Jersey, when I got clean in September of 92, I wanted her back. And my sisters told me that I would have to have at least 1 year clean before I got her back, because they said, we're sick and tired of you being in and out of her life like a swinging door. So you got to get a year clean. But what happened that at about 6 months, my daughter started acting out so terribly that they said, you better come get her or we're going to put her in a home. And I was glad, because I loved her and I wanted her back. I'm talking about there were the times when I couldn't even go to Jersey for Christmas, missing birthdays for like 3 or 4 years consecutively in a row. Because I had good intentions, y'all, I really did. I'm talking about I would take a portion of my paycheck and I would go to Kmart and I would put all of the toys and all of the basketballs that she wanted on layaway. But before the end of the night was over, I was broke. So I would go back to the Kmart and I would take the things off of layaway, promising that I would put them back on the next week, but never being able to make it back. So now there's Christmas, and here's a little girl in Jersey thinking that she's at least going to meet her mother for Christmas. And I was too ashamed. I was too ashamed to show up empty-handed. I said, okay, well, I'll call. So I would pick up the phone and dial the number to my mother's house in New Jersey. And I would listen to the festivities in the background. But I would hang up because I was too ashamed to say I'm hooked on drugs and I want to make it, but there's too many hit houses in between here and the train station to make it to Jersey. Too ashamed to say I can't come because I'm freebasing up that basketball that you asked for Christmas. I was too ashamed. So I just kept hoping and wishing that things would change and that one day I would be freed. And it took a long time coming. But like I said, I prayed. And I prayed. And I prayed. Even in the midst of getting high. Who can relate to praying in the midst of getting high? Sometimes my prayer was, oh God, if you just get me out of this one, I'll never take a hit again. And then sometimes it was, oh God, if you just let this crack be good, this will be the last hit, I promise. I prayed those prayers. And then I prayed the prayers of sincerity, saying, God, if you would get me clean, I promise that I will use this clean time, not just for me, but to help other addicts. And I remember praying that prayer. And I remember meaning it with all my heart. And as I say, I got clean September of 92. And when my daughter came back to live with me at 6 months, I thought that I was well enough to deal with her. Although I had 6 months clean on the outside, on the inside, there wasn't a lot of healing because I didn't have a sponsor that I was using. I had one in name only. And I didn't know how to trust God with my daughter. I didn't know how to turn her over to the God of my understanding. Y'all told me that my daughter had a God and I had to turn her over. And I didn't know how to do that. Because I thought that the reason that she was so screwed up was my fault. So that it was my responsibility to unscrew her. And so I did not know how to turn a child over to the God of my understanding. And so I took on all of her mess and I took on all of her drama. And on the outside, she looked okay. But who knows all of the hurt, the resentments, and the fear, and the hatred that our children feel when we abandon them. I mean, even the times when she was living with me, she was still abandoned because I sent her up to her room. And I would justify saying, well, at least she ain't seen me getting high. Big deal. She was probably peeking over the banister when I was geeking and looking on the floor for some crumbs and stuff that wasn't even there. And so here she is now in my life at 6 months. And I stayed clean all the way up to the point where I had about 22 months. I did know enough to let go of the drunken boyfriend that I had. I knew that he had made the decision to go back to the left to the bars, and that I had to let him go and make the decision to keep going to the right into recovery. So I let go of him. I moved out and got my own house, and he co-signed for me. I did not need any of his money, but I needed the co-signature, because as long as I'm not using, I can be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And so I moved. But he came back in my life at 20 months, and he told me he had cancer and he was going to die. And y'all had told me that you never let an addict die alone. And I didn't think that God would forgive me if this man died and I wasn't there for him. I knew I wasn't well enough to be with him, but I thought I was well enough to tuck him in his grave and get along with my recovery. Because you see, his sister had cancer the year before. And from the moment that she found out she had cancer, 4 months later, she died. So when he wound up with cancer, I said, okay, well, 4 months later, he died. Well, the trip part is the man ain't never even died. He didn't even die. But as a result, I picked up. And at first, I blamed him. I thought that he was the reason why I had picked up. But it was a lot of stuff going on. There was the daughter who was rebellious and acting out and talking back and disrespecting me, that was really taking a toll on me because I didn't know how to let that thing go. I was reaching out to the people in the church I would go run into Bible study and say, I just cussed my daughter out on the way here. Help! And they weren't able to help. And I held resentments against them until later I found out that they didn't know how to be there for somebody the way we learn in here, how to be there for somebody. And then it also had something to do about the old boyfriend that while filling the void, I rode all the way to Jersey to get, who was still in active addiction. And I didn't, you know, get high the first couple times. I set him up with some people in the area that I knew. But then I said, you know what? They're smoking your stuff too quick. Let me fix you one of my pipes. And once I made my particular brand of pipe, I hit it. And didn't know what had come over me. Didn't realize that I was powerless. I thought because I had 22 months clean that I could endure such. Not. So now I'm back off to the races, and now I got a disappointed daughter that asked me, am I using? And I told her no, because I thought that I would hurry up and get clean again because I didn't want to disappoint her. And so I lied to her, even though my girlfriend's daughter said, yeah, I saw your mom over at my house 2 o'clock in the morning getting high. And she was geeking so bad that they said they was going to call you if she, you know, start acting right. And so I lied to her. What I'm trying to talk about is that I had 22 years clean, and this disease is progressive, chronic, and fatal. At 22 months, I picked up again, and in less than 6 months, all I had built and worked with was put up in that pipe, in less than 6 months. But now the daughter was really out of control, and 6 months after I picked up, my daughter was 13 years old, and guess what she did one night when we had an argument? She said, you think you're crazy, I'm going to do something to show you, you know, who's crazier. And I thought that she was going to report me to Child Protective Services, because that's what her little friend was doing. I'm here to report to you that my daughter burnt my house down to the ground, and I mean burnt it down to the ground. It was such a shock. I was so devastated. I left out. She was waving. I pulled up later on to hear my house was in fire. I thought my daughter was in the house. I went berserk, running in the house to get her. And she was something real spooky and sinister. She was sitting in the bushes behind the house watching the house go up in smoke. And I knew at that point I had to let it go. I was clean for 22 months, but it took 29 months to make it back. But I didn't show up for the court. They took her to jail. And here's this girl who would have been voted the best little girl in the neighborhood, never gotten any problems. And all of a sudden, at 13, she's burning down the house and got like 3 years in jail. And they said the only reason she didn't get 30 because she was a minor. And so one of my dreams and my hopes, even when I got clean, was that this 13-year-old girl would come and live with me. But from 13 to 16, she was in jail. Then she went to foster home, and she was never able to live with me while she was a minor. And that hurt real bad, y'all. It hurt me real bad because I loved my daughter, and things just didn't work out that way. And even when she got out, she was always acting out. My daughter was calling me crackheads all the way up to the time that I had 4 or 5 years clean, and I would run into the rooms. And they was like, well, you still got to love her, and you still got to buy her them sneakers. I'm like, what? She called me a crackhead bee. They said, you got to love her even more. And I didn't understand. But I wanted change more than I wanted to go upside her head. I wanted to recover, and I wanted to be open to take suggestions. And so I had to do what y'all told me. So she burnt my house, and I went on a rampage for 29 months. But I had hope this time because I knew that the same God that had got me clean could and would get me clean again. But I knew I had to do something differently. I knew I had to learn how to make my own recovery my priority, and I knew I had to learn how to surrender my daughter to God. And I knew I had to just take away all of the worry and the fear of what would happen to her and focus on my recovery. So although a part of my getting clean was for my daughter, I predominantly got clean for me. And I'm glad, because there's some situations and circumstances that turned out in my daughter's life that I'm about to share with you, that had I just been doing it for her, I'd be smoking some crack today. But I got clean for me. And this December 13th, I will be celebrating 10 years clean. I will be celebrating 10 years clean. And I'm grateful. Things in my life have taken a wondrous turn because I know why I'm here today. I'm coming here from growth and I'm coming here for change. And although I'm grateful that I have changed and that I have recovered, my daughter hasn't recovered yet. She's still in a lot of pain. She's still going off like a rocket. And it hurts. It hurts that about 3 years ago, she calls me on the phone and tells me she had made a decision to live a homosexual lifestyle. I freaked out. I have gay friends. It's no problem loving and accepting you. I don't care about your sexual preference. It's okay for me to be around you and not judge you, but not when it's my daughter. And it's not so much about the sexual preference, it's about the fact that she's running around dressing up like a little boy. I didn't have a little boy, I had a little girl, I want her back. And I know it ain't about me, but I haven't accepted that yet. And I couldn't share about this with anybody. But when I asked God on Thursday, what do you want me to share? This poured out of my spirit. So I know there's supposed to be a release. I share with my sponsor exclusively and maybe an old boyfriend from the past. But I don't share it. And I'm wondering, which one of my girlfriends or friends knows she gay? What do they think? Why don't they ask me? Is it because it's obvious or because they don't have what a girl told me is like gaydar? You know, who can tell? It's not about the sexual preference. It's why you gotta dress like a little boy. I don't understand. And it hurts. It hurts that she went to a rehab a couple years ago and wasn't able to embrace the program. Oh, but the good news. The good news is that even though God, just as sure as God is not a respecter of persons, neither is Narcotics Anonymous. And when I came in here, I heard a real simple message. That any addict, and when we're talking about any addict, we're talking about any addict, black, any addict, white, any addict, gay, any addict, straight, any addict, rich, any addict, poor or homeless, any addict can stop using drugs. Can lose the desire to use and can find a new way to live. That's what this program promises us. So know her choices and they're not about me. But I had to come here today and show you that it hurts and tell you that it hurts because although everything else in my life is going so well, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. And if I can't learn to let go and free myself from this little area, that little area come and manifest and try to take away all that I worked for. And I'm not going to let that happen. I've come too far to throw the towel in the ring now. I have worked too hard, prayed too hard, gone through too much, surrendered too much, loved too much, trusted too much, let go of men that we've had it too much. I've come too far to end it now. I've come too far. I'm not willing to take the risk to lose what God has already blessed me with. And so I share today that I got a daughter that's gay and I'm ashamed. But thank God for a sponsor who's going to help me deal with that when we roll back around to that 6 and 7. Thank God that although I got some information, I don't have all the information I need to continue to recover. I can't recover feeding myself my own information. I can't recover that way. I have to be open to take suggestions from people in the rooms. And I said I wanted to go first, hoping there would be a little bit of people in here. But I told God, okay, if this is what you want me to share, I'm going to share it. Freedom ain't free, but I feel good. I feel free. Walking around in bondage for somebody else's issues and taking it personal, thinking it's got a reflection of me. Oh, I ain't all that good. I mean, if the truth is all right, when I was out there getting high, I dibbled to that other side. But I wasn't gay. I was just being a freak. I think. More will be revealed. Through my own inability to accept personal responsibility for my life. I got myself in the messes that I got myself. So all I can do today is be a power of example to my child. But I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you about the fact that when I was out there using, one of the things that hurt me so bad was the abandonment that I felt with my sisters. They couldn't love and have compassion for me that I needed, and I cried out to God. And he said that I will more than make it up to you for the love you don't get from your biological sisters. I will put women in your life that will more than make it up for the nurturing that you don't get from them. God is not a man that he would lie. I've got so many women in my life because how many of you know that blood is not necessarily thicker than water? And all of the people in my inner court, we are not related biologically, but we are spiritually. Because it's not by blood, not by power, but it's by God's spirit. And I'm grateful for that. So I'm not a sisterless girl today. And I'm not a childless mother. And the thing that hurts me about me and my daughter's relationship today is because I could deal with the estrangement when I was out there using. And then I could deal with the estrangement all of the years when she was in hate mode and calling me crackhead bees even when I had 5, 6, and 7 years clean. But we ain't even beefing or bickering or badgering today. And she doesn't want to be subject to what I have. I've got good love, good compassion, good mothering skills. Although I told her I don't approve of the gay lifestyle, she knows beyond a shadow of a doubt that I love her. And I've invited her and whoever she would be with at the time to my house. I just said, don't be kissing and hugging all over me because I am not there. I ain't there. And that has not been a problem. And somebody told me that darkness is afraid of light. But it hurts that all of the riches in my spirit, that all of the rich served spirit that God has put in me that I want to give to my daughter, she doesn't want to receive. It hurts me that all the riches and gold that I have in the bank, she doesn't want to receive. Now I know how God felt when for so many years he was trying to get me to receive all of the blessings that he had for me, and I would constantly choose that nickel when God was trying to slide a dollar piece on me. Now I know how he feels. Everybody gets a turn up in here. Why do I keep coming back? Why am I here? To continue to grow, to continue to get the courage. I was afraid to share what I just shared. But y'all told me that courage was fear that had said her prayers. And so I prayed. So courage is not the absence of fear. It's moving on in spite of the fear, not letting the fear get the best of you. So just as sure as the fact that I have sisters today is not contingent upon how my sisters act, whether or not I'm mothering is not contingent upon whether or not my daughter comes around. Because I prayed and I asked God to put, you know, a woman, it doesn't even matter what her age is, someone who can receive this vessel of motherhood that I have to give. And so the ball's no longer in their court. The ball's in my court today. Because I got some tools, I got some gifts, some empowerment that come from Narcotics Anonymous. That's why I'm here. It's okay that I'm not all there. The tragedy would be to think that I've arrived. Because so many things are going well in my life and miss it. It's a journey, not an event. I'm going to go to my grave, continue to want to be perfected. And the reason God wants to perfect me, guess what? This situation with my daughter, situations going on in my life, it ain't even about me. Hello? It's about me getting to the other side. God said, I need you to be free so that I can use you to free others. It's about being of maximum service in this program. And I looked up the word maximum, and it meant to the highest. It meant to the utmost. I'm not there yet. That's why I'm here, so I can keep coming back. Because I want to pour what I have into the lives of other addicts. Not only did God bless me with some powerful sisters, God actually birthed in my belly a woman's ministry that I head up that is doing very vibrant, 5 years old now. I'm talking about going from a menace to a minister. I'm talking about going from rags to riches. And I'm not just talking about in the material sense. I'm talking about you looking at a woman that was bruised and battered and tattered and torn. And it's not like that today. I'm filled with love and peace and joy and the light of God. I feel good about myself most times today. Even in the situation with my daughter, I still have joy. Because joy doesn't mean that there's nothing going on wrong. Joy means that no matter what's going on the surface, all is well. All is spiritually and fundamentally well. And God promised me that through this share today, that I will be able to say, in that situation with my daughter, it is well with my soul. That's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.
Okay, now I would like to introduce Joe.
I'm Joel, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Joe.
And thank you for sharing, dear. Well, I'm worn out. I'm ready to close. One of the things I want to say is one of the major reasons why I'm here are because of the people who came before me. Who are here, and I just had a very good friend walk in, and I want to tell this tape and let you all know that my friend Ellen H. there has 20 years clean today. And it's people like her, one of the reasons that I keep coming back. That's a hard act to follow. Thank you very much. You know, when I was asked to put these up, when I was asked to share on this topic, and I'm more grateful to be here, and more grateful to Narcotics Anonymous than I could ever share in a thousand words here. When I was asked to share on this topic, why are we here? The first thing that occurred to me was that there are different reasons that I'm here now. And I wanted to talk some about that then when I got here. My clean date is January 29th, 1990. And I picked up white key tags, white chips then, for like 5 years or more before that. And, you know, so when I think about why I came here then and why I come here now, there are some differences. You know, I wanted to tell you some as well about now that I, you know, I'm here because I love Narcotics Anonymous. But I had an experience last night that I hadn't planned on, and I ended up in a situation with another addict, not somebody who I'm a close friend of or anything, but somebody who I've had involvement with, and this other addict had relapsed, and I had found out, and I was talking with this individual for about an hour. This individual had about 8 years clean, and this individual was using out of control for the last couple months. And, you know, he was able to sit there and talk to me about it, and he was able to sit there and talk about not wanting to use, about wanting to be clean, about remembering and knowing what how good it is to be clean and how good it feels to be clean, and at the same time knowing that he was going to use tomorrow, knowing that there was that part of him, you know, the monster was awake. And he was powerless over it. And, you know, we talked about, and he knows, he has the information, you know. He knows that he needs to do 90 and 90, or he needs to check himself into a program, or he needs to do something to break the cycle. But he can't do that right now, you know. And he can say that. One of the things they told me when I got here was that I never had to use again against my will. And I talked to this guy, and I remembered that. You know, I remembered what it's like to tell myself I'm not going to use 1,000 times, to tell myself that I'll do anything, and yet the car seemed to turn on its own. you know? And I knew the pain it was going to cause. He knows. He's got an 8-month-old child, you know? He's got a wife. He's got a job that he's had for 8-10 years, you know, in recovery. And he knows he's on the brink of losing it. You know, he knows people can tell. And he can't stop, you know? And so what that reminded me of as I'm coming up here to talk about why I'm here is that I can tell you where I came from, and I can tell you lots of the gifts of recovery and the reasons I'm coming back. But, you know, the bottom line is whatever I tell you about why I'm here, the real reason I'm here beyond it all is because I don't want to go back there again. You know, that's it. You know, because I know I will revert. I don't have a question in the world that could be me, that there but for the grace of God and the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, just for today, no more, no less, goes me. You know, I have a ton of information, you know, and I've got a ton of good experiences, and I got gifts from recovery that I could not tell you about in 10 hours standing up here. And yet, if I stop doing this, I know I will begin to rationalize the most outrageous nonsense becomes sense, you know? And, you know, we talked about he's using now, once the cycle starts, this guy, he has so much guilt and pain and shame, you know, and he's back into the self. Remember the self-pity about, he's just such a burden to everybody, he might as well just kill himself. And so he's using just to deaden that pain for 10 more minutes, you know, because once the monster's awake, it's self-perpetuating. And he's creating, he's got so much self-hatred once again that the fear is that if he stops using, he has to face all that, what he's done now, you know? So he keeps trying to use, you know, to deaden that pain, which just creates more, you know? And, you know, it reminds me that I've heard it here today, and I know that one of the reasons I'm here and I keep coming back is that I do have a choice today. I got a choice today about whether I use. But, you know, I don't want to take that for granted. It's easy to say, oh, yeah, we got a choice today. You know, but I remember when I was like that guy, when I didn't have a choice. You know, I have a daily reprieve. I got a choice today because a miracle happened. Because that obsession to use, I don't mean thinking about it, because there's a lot of, you know, bullshit going on in life. I mean that obsession to use, that craving, of which I'm powerless, has been removed just for today. And I got a choice. And that's a miracle, because I tried for years, you know? And we talked about, you know, he knows what he needs to do. He needs to surrender. Surrender. Do what, you know, I said, what lengths are you willing to go to? Be honest about what lengths are you willing to go to right now? And he didn't know. It's honest, you know? And it's easy, you know? My sponsor asked me. I ask my sponsors all the time, what lengths are you willing to go to? I know if I'm able to tell you and feel it in my gut, I'm willing to go to absolutely any lengths to stay clean today, that I got a good chance of staying clean, that it's in that level of surrender that the obsession is being removed. And if I've got a reservation, if it's, you know, I'm willing to go to, well, this, this, and this, but that's where the disease creeps in, you know? And so, what does it take to surrender? Why did it take me 5 years of picking up white chips? Why did it take me 25 years of using every day? You know? Why do some people get off the elevator earlier? You know? Why do, you know, I kept thinking, you know, every bottom was the deepest, you know, until, you know, I realized it was only until, you know, when was I going to stop digging? There was no deepest bottom. You know, every time, I was in treatment 6 times. Every time I thought it could never be worse than this, you know, and it always got worse than this. And I know what it's like to, you know, if I could will myself to surrender, just surrender, Joel. Whatever it is, a resentment I'm carrying around from work, you know, or some obsession, you know, that's plaguing me, anything. If I could just will myself to surrender, because surrender is the key. It's the answer. And I know, and this guy knows too, that on the other side of surrender is always absolutely freedom and relief. you know? But while I'm there, while he's there, he can't do it. You know, he wants to, and he can't do it. And that's the horror of this disease, you know? That's why they call it a disease. That's why they call it denial. If I knew I was in it, it wouldn't be denial, you know? So, you know, talking to this guy, you know, brought me back to, you know, and I used for just about every single day for 25 years, and I was a garbage can. My drugs of choice were high and more, and I knew I was an addict, you know? And you talk about denial while I'm here, you know, by the end of that time, I knew I was an addict. I didn't have a question in the world I was an addict. And I had totaled 7 cars. I had been through 2 marriages and various other relationships I held hostage, you know, that turned into wreckage. I had woken up, come to from unconsciousness countless times in jails and in locked psychiatric wards and in emergency rooms. You know, I was tens of thousands of dollars in debt. I had been, you know, almost died numerous times from blood poisoning. You know, on and on and on and on, the typical wreckage we talk about. And I would have told you, yeah, I know I'm an addict, but is my life unmanageable? Not really. You know, if I had more money, you know, if my damn family would get off my back, if, you know, da-da-da-da, I couldn't see it. You know, and that is so clear now. And do I think that I'm incapable of going back there? Mm-mm. I know I'm capable of going back there. I have a good friend who I got clean with in recovery, my best friend in recovery, who'll be here later tonight. And, you know, we got a pact. We made a pact years ago that, you know, if I ever, and this is just this addict, I ain't judging anybody else, if I ever start this bullshit about go to one meeting a week, and don't have a service position, and don't really call my sponsor, and all that stuff I did. I worked Joel Anonymous for 5 years, you know, to kick my ass, you know? To kick my ass, Martin, please, you know? I got here, by the grace of God, you know, for the last time, away picking up a white chip, and you know, recovery has been well far beyond my wildest dreams, you know. And I really don't want to take it for granted, you know. And the reasons I am here now are, you know, bottom line, I don't want to go there again. But it is more than that, you know. I found a way to live my life. And I always wanted a way to live my life, you know. That's all what I really wanted, you know, a way to be happy. Well, not what it's all about. I just wanted to be happy. I wanted to be the normal, you know. People seem to go through life, and I was miserable, you know. And when I got here, you know, it says in the introduction to our basic text that we were in the grip of a hopeless dilemma. And, oh, I remember that so well, and I saw this guy in it again, you know, last night. A dilemma is when, you know, there are 2 alternatives, you know, and you don't know which one to pick. And a hopeless dilemma is when both alternatives are horrible. You know, they suck. You know, and that was my life. And by the time I got here, I was in such pain. You know, I started off being in a, this was a party. You know, I thought I'd found the way to feel good for the rest of my life. And I had a party, and I ended up locked in a room, like many of us, locked in a room by myself. You know, afraid to answer the door, petrified when the phone went off, with the blinds drawn. Afraid of life. I'd alienated and stolen from everybody in my family and every friend I had, you know? And the choice, the dilemma, the 2 choices I had were use and be miserable and die, or don't use and be miserable. That's how it seemed, you know? That was the only 2 choices. I couldn't conceive of not using. That was going to be more the worst thing of all. That was my hopeless dilemma. We were in the grips of a hopeless dilemma, the solution to which is spiritual in nature. And that's why I'm here, you know, because I have been introduced by you all. I have found, and I know something about in my life today, what the solution is. And there's only one solution. You know, there's only one solution, and it's a spiritual solution, and it's implementing that in my life. I always take, you know, I've learned, and I believe I come from a sponsorship family that is real purist about the steps, and I believe that that's what I need to do. That's what I need to do. What I need to keep doing is keep working the steps formally, you know, no matter what. And there have been times in recovery when I can't do, I don't know what to do. The only thing I know how to do is to keep working steps with my sponsor and keep showing up, you know. And, you know, the first step is I got a problem. And it's the all-inclusive problem, addiction. It affects absolutely every area of my life. Active addiction is deeply rooted in fear, insecurity, and low self-esteem, obsession of the mind, compulsion of the body, self-centeredness of the spirit. Triangle of self-obsession, living in, remember? Living in just resentment in the past, everything in the present's about anger, and it's never the way I want it to be, and the future is all about fear. Not fear, terror. I woke up afraid every single day of my life, you know? Couldn't face that, but I know I did. Every day of my life, the shoe's going to drop, you know? That's active addiction. The negative tapes, you know, all that noise inside the head. You're not good enough, Joel. You're a piece of shit. You're da-da-da-da-da-da. It's all their fault. All that stuff, that's active addiction. That's my problem. That's the first step. There's a solution. It's in the second step. There's only one solution. It's a spiritual solution. Then I got a choice. Am I going to make a decision to implement this solution in my life? Third step. I'm going to make a choice to commit myself to living a life based on spiritual principles. And that's the solution. That's our program. What's our program? Our program is a set of principles written so simply we can follow them in our daily life. And am I going to follow, live my life according to those principles? See, I live my life before that according to my feelings. Feel, act, react. You know, that was my life. My feelings were the only thing there was. And when I felt it, that's what drove me. That's what I did. Learning to live my life today according to a set of principles is a whole different ballgame. And that's the third step, making a decision to do that. And to keep doing it and to keep coming back here when the newness wears off and the social stuff is weird. And when I even going through the times when I don't want to come, that I'm committing myself to keep doing this for the rest of my life. You know, just for today. Living according to principles. One of my favorite lines in We Do Recover is that we learn to make wise and loving decisions based on principles that have real value in our lives. Man, what a gift that is. As opposed to a lifetime of making unwise and self-destructive and destructive to you decisions based on feelings and impulses, you know? That didn't have any real value, that had immediate gratification value. But that was it. You know, and then, of course, the way we implement that decision is to work the rest of the steps. You know, and that's where it is. I'm here because I have found, I believe you all have given me. I believe this works for anybody. I believe it will work for you. I know it works for me. I know this will work in my life. I know, my other favorite line in the text is that it's real simple. As our spiritual needs are met, our living problems are reduced to a point of comfort. I know that's true. I know it's true. And the more, what does it mean? As my spiritual needs are met, you know, I keep coming here to get my spiritual needs met. Well, what that means is, for me is that I'm feeling faith in my life, that I feel about what's going on today, I feel acceptance. I'm going through a couple things in life, you know. One of them's at work and one of them's outside of work, and they're a son of a bitch. One of them, I'm having to make decisions. I'm having to make a decision that is really, really difficult, and I don't want to make it. You know, it goes totally against everything I feel, and it affects. It affects my recovery. And I won't go into all what it is, but I know what the right thing to do is. You know, I know what the right decision is. I know what I have to do. And it's what I'm going to do. You know? And The feel, it's, you know, and it's one, probably the biggest in a long time where the feelings really don't match. Because I really believe that, you know, we do get to the point where, you know, we, as we stay here and recover, where our will becomes, you know, what we always realize what God's will was all the time anyway. That God really wants for us exactly what we find out when we get rid of all, the, you know, the bullshit and the stuff in the way through working steps. What we really want for ourselves as well is for what God wants for us, you know. And what God wants for me in here is to do the right thing, you know. And it's not exactly, it means that I'm not going to feel real good about it, you know. But on the outside, but I know on the inside, you know, what's most important. I do know what's most important. What's most important and what I pray to God, the strength, I'll go a long ways before that I'll sell out again is my integrity. Because that's ultimately all what I do have. I sold that. I don't know if I ever had any. You know, every value I was taught, everything I believed in, I had sold out long before I got here. You know, and all the ones that I said I wouldn't, you know, I did. You know, just like all the things I said I'd never do, I did. You know, yet means you're eligible too. And so, you know, the goal is to do the right thing. You know? And I'll come through that, you know, and I'm doing that. And I'm not, and am I whacked out? Am I wrapped around the axle about it? No, I've got some pain about it, but there's, I have some faith about it. I believe, you know, it's like our literature is filled with it, you know. We sit here and talk about it, you know. This is about turning my will and my life over to the care of God. Well, do I really believe that? Do I believe, do I really have a higher power that I believe will take care of me and has my good at heart? It's real easy to come in here and tell you that, yeah, things are going great in life. My relationship is wonderful and I got a new car and I got a raise at work and everybody loves me today and God's really working in my life. It's a whole nother thing. Do I have the faith to tell you that, you know, this situation sucks, you know, and I may get fired, and the dog died, and God really is really working in my life, you know. See, I'm the kind of addict, that addict is down in there, who wants to, you know, tell you that yes, yeah, turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand it, but I only want to be grateful when I get back what this addict judges and labels as being what I should get. You know, if I really trust my God, I should be grateful for every minute of life. You know, every minute. And this is, and I don't understand this. I don't understand why I have to make this decision. I don't understand why this situation. It does seem unfair, but it's life. You know, and I do believe. I believe. I know for me that without exception. Every situation in recovery where at the time I have felt strongly with every fiber of my being, this is the worst possible thing that could be happening to me. On the other end, if I walked through it and I used recovery and I used you all, on the other end I was able to see that there was some reason I needed to go through this or there was some way I was better and I never could have seen that before, you know? And so I believe that about this. But that's the deal. That's what my spiritual needs are being met means. It means that what I believe up here, I feel down here. And sometimes the 12 inches between, well, many times in recovery, the 12 inches between here and here are the longest journey that I make. You know, there are times when I know, I believe, my higher power is taking care of me. But do I feel it or do I feel resentful and angry? And rebellious, and so forth, you know? So, but if I keep doing this, if I keep nurturing this, and that's what's important, you know, for me. The things that were important for me before are not the things that are important for me. They're, you know, are important. I love material things. I love those kind of things in life. They enhance my happiness, you know? I love my relationship. I've been given the gift of, and that's why I keep coming here. I know that that's possible. I know it's possible to have a loving, caring relationship that's based on unconditional love and acceptance. It's not that where we treat each other with respect and care. And we don't harm each other. Just like I wouldn't harm you in the rooms, you know? By following ultimately the same traditions that we've learned in these rooms, you know? And that's nurturing and is based on these principles. I know that's possible today. And I'm living it. But I'm only living it because I know what's first. See, I was told when I got into a relationship, finally in recovery, my sponsor told me, he said, if you want to be in a relationship, you need to be the kind of person you'd like to have a relationship with. And I don't think that was true for a number of years and a lot of step work. And the other thing I was told was to sit down with the person. And I did this 13 years ago. And it was one of the hardest things I ever did because, you know, once again, I was infatuated. You know, relationships are intoxicating. It's an interesting word, right? You know, love is intoxicating, you know. And I was told, and I sat down, and I told my partner. And I said, you know what, I'm going to tell you probably the most important thing I will ever tell you. And that's that my recovery has to be the most important thing in my life, without exception, you know? Because it's simple. If you like what you have here, you won't have it. You just won't have it, you know? And I'm saying that more for me than you, but also I'm saying it because what that means is there's going to come a day, a night when, you know, I need to go out of here and go to a meeting or talk to a sponsor or talk to a sponsee, and you're going to want me here. And I went through that, you know, in a marriage. Most important thing I ever said. And I was blessed to, you know, to be with a person who said, well, yeah, there's going to be some time when I need to go do something, then you're going to want me here, you know. Wasn't a big deal, you know, and not threatened by it. But see, that's why, you know, I'll forget. I know that if I keep my recovery as the most important thing in my life, without exception, everything else will not only fall into place, everything else will be about at least my experience of life. See, life doesn't... I'm a firm believer in the first step that my life will always be beyond manageable by me. But with my higher power, life will feel more manageable. You know, it feels more manageable. It's my perception, you know. It's about my attitude, you know. And believe me, active addiction is about all those things I talked about for me, and it's about, more than anything, it's about a negative attitude. I have been there in recovery where, you know, there is one little thing, and that's all I can see. And my sponsor calls it, you know, the little black dot in the big white painting. And I can't see anything but that little black dot, and it just envelops me. That's active addiction, you know? When my relationship with my partner, she enhances my happiness no end. And I cannot imagine the pain if, God forbid, she got hit by a truck or something like that. It would be so intense. But I know that the moment, the fact that she enhances my pain, my life, my happiness, or anything, the new stereo or the car or anything, or the new job or the raise, the money, the moment it turns from it enhances my happiness and takes that little flip over into I need it to be happy, I'm into my addiction. And it's not far from there until I've got to have it. And it's not far from there until life begins to become unmanageable if I don't have it. And I'm willing to go to lengths that sacrifice other parts of my life, you know? So, you know, they told me when I first got here, you know, that what you think of me is none of my damn business. And I needed to hear that. But I still care that you love me. I still want you to like me. And I still care. I'm just not willing to sell myself out to get it anymore in the way that I used to be, you know. So she enhances my happiness, you know. And the fact that that's possible is a miracle. And that's why I keep coming here, you know? And that's and so all of these things about knowing what really makes me happy today, you know? Knowing that it's possible here to reconcile our past. You know, I came in here, and I know people who do. I came in here with stuff, with hatreds that I never in a million years could have imagined being in any way free of. I thought, well, you know, if a miracle happens here like you all say, maybe I'll learn to live with it. You know? But we get freed from stuff here. You know? Stuff, you know, thing, you know, the stuff in my life that, you know, the wounds I came in here, we all come in here with them. You know, whether it's abuse or selling ourselves out or the things we did or the things done to us. You know, to actually experience being free of that stuff, it's there. You know, yeah, I got real decent regret about the stuff that I did, you know. But I know today that I'm responsible. I'm not responsible for my disease, but I sure as hell am responsible for my recovery. I know I'm responsible for my serenity. I know I'm responsible for my happiness. That's up to me, you know. I know that when, you know, when there are problems in life, but I know that my response to them, which starts up here, can go everywhere from using to just being wrapped around crazy and miserable to feeling like, hey, you know, I'm doing the best I can. God is taking care of me. I'll keep getting through it. It hurts. I'll keep using the tools and share it with you and call my sponsor and go to a meeting and actually feel some peace amid the storm. You know? Serenity is not freedom from the storm. It's peace amid the storm. And that all depend. That don't depend on the situation, where I am on that string. That's all about me. And it's all about me and my spiritual needs. And it's about me and my relationship to my higher power. As our spiritual needs are met, our living problems are reduced to a point of greater comfort. You know? It says it. And I believe it. And I know it works. So I got one goal here. That's what it's become. That's why I keep coming here. And that's why I'm working these steps as hard as I still can. Formally. I'm on my fifth time through them. With a sponsor. What am I? I'm to think that I've gotten all I can get by one, two, three, or four times. I got all I can get. Man. You know? It tells us. You know? Read the 11th step. It uses words like unlimited freedom. You know? That's big stuff. And see, freedom is the promise. And that's why I love Narcotics Anonymous. Just like, you know, we got the all-inclusive first step. We got the all-inclusive promise. Somebody told me, well, we got a dozen. And I'm thinking, well, we don't need a dozen. We got the all-inclusive one promise. Freedom from active addiction. Remember, it doesn't say freedom from using. Just like the first step doesn't say drugs. It's freedom from active addiction. And if you free me from all of that obsessive resentment, anger, and fear, and low self-esteem, and beating up on myself, you know, that swamp I lived in of, you know, uncontrolled feelings and negativity and compulsive self-flagellation, you know, you free me from that. And, man, it's beyond my wildest dreams. So I keep coming here because, you know, life has switched. You know, it really is. It really, I know. Do I live it every moment? Of course not. I'm still self-centered. You know, you don't change a lifetime of self-centeredness in 1, 2, 5, 10, 16 years. You know? But I've glimpsed, you know, at the top of the mountain. You know, and it's, you know, our 6th and 7th step, you know, it's to be entirely ready to have all. That's the top of the mountain. And I'll never get there because I'm human. Not all the time, not in every way. But, you know, sometimes I forget that. There's a speaker I love who talks about that. You know, we come in here and we get up out of the gutter, a lot of times literally, not just figuratively, and we stand up on the sidewalk, and it's pretty damn good. The view is great, you know? Maybe we go up a couple steps, and it's looking pretty good, and we stay there, and that's great. But we forget the invitation is to the top of the mountain at every day, you know? So what, you know, the things that are important, it's like I have 5 minutes. I have a contract with this higher power that I found here. I found it here. I came in as a born and bred atheist. My father died of this disease, and I went back for 4 years and found his sponsor and said, why couldn't he get it? He was in treatment 8 times. Couldn't get a year clean. His sponsor told me because he never could get the second step. He who quibbles with step 2 uses. It's just that simple. So I found this higher power, and I've got a contract. And it's simple. It's contract, you know, and like any contract, you know. God's side of the contract is, I will give you freedom from the obsession to use today. I will lift that, you know, that obsession that will make me use, like this guy I was with last night, no matter how much I don't want to, no matter how much I know it's going to kill me and screw up my life more, you know. And if I keep doing the things I do, my side of the contract, God will do that, you know. God will even give me things beyond my wildest dreams. Comfort in my own skin. You know, the ability to feel just some peace in my life and to feel good about Joel. And this, you know, the power to carry it out, to make the hard decision, to do the thing that I know is the right thing to do. And in the long run, I'll be okay with Joel, even though the feelings on the surface will be rough. And God will even give me some freedom, some peace amid the storm. And my side of the contract is, what did they tell us when we first got here? To go to meetings regularly. Don't pick up, go to meetings regularly. To keep going to meetings, Joel, when I feel like it, when I don't, and when I'm not sure. To call my sponsor, to get a sponsor and use him. You know? To get one, use one, be one. To pray like hell. To nurture the spirit. To nurture my spiritual life. My ability and the power to live my life according to spiritual principles. And they're listed. Read 12. You can read them. There's 12 of them if you count caring and sharing as one. You know? If I do that and work the steps or die, then that's my side of the contract. And it really is pretty simple, and I just need to keep doing it just for today and be grateful that I'm so grateful that I'm willing to do it. Because like that guy, you know, it's like situations like that that remind me to not take my willingness for granted. Remember when you wanted to be willing and you couldn't? You know, relapse like that. You know, I told him, I said, I remember. It's like being in jail and having the keys in your pocket and you can't use them. So that's my side of the contract, you know. And I'll wrap up. And just for today, that's what I need to do, you know, because I don't want to go back. And I know I will, you know. And it's a matter of my actions. It's what I do today. I stay clean on what I do today, not what I've done in the last 16 years, you know. And in order to, excuse my language, in order to get fucked, first you got to get into position. And at least one of the things that goes with time is you get to know the enemy, you know. And I know the enemy better and better, I think. And I know what a getting in position is. And I pray to God I don't go there. There is so much wisdom here, and it's free. You know, the things I've learned here, I never could have imagined learning. And we hear them all the time and take them for granted. When you're going through hell, keep moving. What a concept. You know, pain is unavoidable. Misery is optional. What a concept. I didn't know that. Happiness is optional. That one really knocked me out of the chair. You know, if you're not happy today, what day are you waiting for? You know? A lot of times we're growing the most when we feel like it the least. I didn't know that, and I believe it. And if you're struggling today, remember that. You know, you're growing the most when you feel like it the least. And there's a whole hell of a lot of times in recovery when we're doing a whole lot better than we're feeling. You know, so how I'm feeling today are not the facts of my life. What am I doing? You know? So the bottom line is, why I'm here is I know that there's not a drug that feels good enough, that gets me high enough. There's not a woman who can love me enough. There's not a car that's fast enough or nice enough. There's not a job that pays enough. All of those things to give me what I really want. What I really want is the things I've talked about. You know, some dignity, which only comes through the love of my higher power. And the ability to feel okay inside Joel. And the ability just to be okay with life. To have a sense of my purpose in life. And to know. And it's about love and service today. It's not about those glamorous things I always thought it was about. It's a pretty quiet life today. It's not about all those glamorous things. I know that the love I show you is 100 times more important than the love you show me. I know that selfless service has a reward that I can't describe to you in words. I can't just get rid of the self in it. That's a God thing. And all I know to do is what you tell me to do, is to keep doing these things and to keep working steps. So that's why I'm here. I'm grateful to be clean and alive. Thanks for letting me share.